Because if 800 million people don't have aspirations, it doesn't make a difference how big the other 400, because the divide will be stronger. If you want a standing ovation, you need to have gone through multiple rooms where you've been booed. Between the two of us said, well, why don't we lift a million people out of poverty every 6 to 7 years?
Hello and welcome. I am Anupam Kher. In the ever-evolving landscape of 21st century, the focus now more than ever is on India. Tonight, I'm joined by an amazing visionary mind. He's an entrepreneur, producer, author, investor, and philanthropist. We welcome Ronnie Screwvala.
Thank you very much for having me here.
So wonderful for you to come. Thank you so much.
I've only had inspirational conversations with you every time we've spoken, so I'm looking forward to this one too.
Inspiration comes from you. You're the ultimate entrepreneur. You have been given this title. How did you manage that?
Ultimate sounds a little bit like it's got a sunset, but I think maybe part of the original ones, I would say. I think I started off at a time when entrepreneurship was not looked at so proudly, so to speak. Three things. I mean, most people said, acha, so you couldn't get a job, so you had to start working for yourself. Second, there was no such thing as funding, angel funding, everything that everyone talks about right now was just not there. You couldn't even get a bank loan. And I think the third one was Parsi parents. So after the 3 months of shock of them saying, I want to do something on my own, because my dad was a professional, my brother studied, did a PhD and has always been a professional. I was the outlander in the family. And I think my dad gave me some incredible advice that very first time. He said, look, if you're finally doing this, be clear, if anything goes wrong, we're not going to be able to help you.
What did you tell him that I'm doing what?
So I said, I don't think I can implement somebody else's vision, and therefore I'm being an entrepreneur. That stage when I wanted to do something, I wasn't clear. Media entertainment came a little later on, and at that time, nobody called it even media and entertainment.
And what time was this? Around what year was this?
This was in the 1980s.
80s.
So, and I think that one sentence of saying, we won't be able to bail you out, kept my feet on the ground for the next 40 years of my life.
So did you speak to your dad about saying that I want to be a businessman, or what was the exact, if you remember, what? Because that word is very key word to which your father said, look, we will not be able to help you if you
do. He was very keen for me to do my chartered accountancy. We negotiated about an MBA, and I said, I want to do something completely on my own. So he said, okay, why don't you do a job for, try, do a CA, do an MBA, do one of these two as a stopgap arrangement, and then do whatever you want to do. And I said, if I have a plan B in life, plan A never works. I think today most people have that. Chalo, let me give it a try, you know? And I think that is the first recipe for failure. Because if you give anything a try, means you have a finite timeline, and failure comes first, success comes only after that.
I completely agree with you. I run an acting school, and a lot of students who come and they said, chalo, isme kuch nahi hua. If this does not work, I will have this. The moment you have that choice, nothing.
It's over.
Nothing.
It is over.
Let me remind you of a failure now in the early stages of your life, and it had me in it and my wife. We did a show together. It was an anchor-based show, which you had done it for Doordarshan or something, which never got picked up. And I had just finished Saransh, and I was very happy, and I was, Kiran, we were not married, and we shot this thing in famous studio. And I remember you coming and you saying, this is what we have done. And we worked very hard. And I think that must be your only failure in life.
Anupam, I think my failure to success ratios are 8 failures to 2 successes. I'm actually quite happy and I'm proud of it. If my 8 failures were not there, my 2 successes wouldn't have been 10x of what they are. So I think that would be one of the ones that we almost passé at this point in time.
I was happy that didn't happen, because after that you never worked with me.
No. We did some work together indirectly.
Yeah, indirectly.
You know, and the movie Awareness Day, which is still a treasure trove.
Yes. Khosla ka Khosla.
Khosla ka Khosla was also phenomenal.
The words that come with you are, you started this cable TV thing. How did that come across?
I think when you're young, you look at opportunities. You don't, serendipity and opportunities are the two words that I think mostly, opportunities in my early stage, serendipity in my later stage. I don't want to be philosophical about it.
Please be philosophical.
No, I'm a very practical person. My wife is much more philosophical. My daughter is much more philosophical. I'm a much more practical person. So for me, serendipity is to put yourself constantly in as many places so that at some stage, you'll be the right place, the right time. Because you need to be in the right place, the right time 3 or 4 times in your life to really break out. But for that, you need to work incredibly hard to be in places so that you can be in right places, right time. And to me, serendipity is that. The other part of serendipity is timing. I think we miss out the importance of timing and how getting your timing right to what you want to do. Both sometimes saying no and to saying yes. Actually, more to saying no than what you say yes in life about. And I think if I look at those and look back to my cable TV, those were opportunistic days. And there was only one channel called Doordarshan at that particular time in India, the national terrestrial network. And the fact that one wanted to give a choice for a second one. And I think those were my incredible learning days, because as a business, everyone thought I was mad, which is a good recipe to know that you might succeed. Because the more... I've also, and I think you come from the same industry, where if you want a standing ovation, you need to have gone through multiple rooms where you've been booed, where people have told you this will never work, you're crazy, and then you get an applause. In fact, in life, if you start by getting an applause, your chances are you're going to go...
Applause is going to fade out.
Down. The number of physical doors that have been slammed onto me taught me incredible lessons. And at the end of 3 or 4 or 5 months, all my... The people I was working with said, maybe this is not a good idea. But for 1 year, we couldn't get a single person to take a cable TV connection. Now, in today's age, that sounds completely there. But at that time, and I think that gave me an incredible amount of resilience.
This wisdom was always there, or you? What was that risk factor that you were ready to take and sort of plunge into various things?
I would say my self-conviction. So I think you're...
So how did that self-conviction come from? Where did it come from?
I think it has to come from you. Definitely not. You're not born with that. I've come from a lower middle class background. That whole psyche for me was very down to earth there. But I would say that conviction that says, I'm in it, I'm all in, I think came from my very early days. Then it matures. There are some things that I think I may have done and pioneered, which were before its time. It takes a lot of courage to actually admit that it's before its time and letting it go. So I think the things that I've let go, whether they've been failures or before its time and its learning, have taught me, and that strengthens your self-conviction. Because we say gut, everything goes with gut. Gut is not about waking up in the morning and having a bright idea and say, I'll go with that. Gut actually is it's exactly like your gut. It's an evolved process. It's like every day, it's accumulating experience, failures, execution, slams, everything. And you're getting better every day.
From cable TV, you established this empire called UTV. Two of my best films were released by you, Khosla Ka Khosla and Wednesday.
Yep.
And then you reached a point when you said, I let go UTV and I will sell it to Disney. Did you get bored with this, or you reached a saturation point, or was it a business deal?
No. So, I mean, that's a great question. And I would say neither of the three. I don't think I've been ever bored with anything in life. I don't think there's a culmination. I don't think you plan exits in life. So I think from where I stood, what I did at early days when nobody could define what you were doing at that stage, media and entertainment became an evolved word. When we starting that, it was like production. The vision that one had to build a company that was not just a creative house, but was a media conglomerate. And I think I had an excellent partner in Disney. For 6 and 7 years, we worked together. Three members of their people were on my board for the longest period of time. So when they popped the question that says, why don't we put it all together? I guess I was a practicalist. So I wasn't bored. It wasn't a business deal for me. I was just being practical.
I said, you have great words to describe yourself.
Yeah, I think practical makes some sense, because of the simple thing. At that stage, I felt if I built this brand, what better can I do than give it to an incredible brand like Disney?
It's thought that people who are practical are not emotional.
No, in fact, I would say I'm a very passionate person. And I think there's a huge gap, even though it sounds like a sliver, between passionate and being emotional. So I think I was extremely passionate about media. I was extremely passionate about the company I built, but I was not emotional about it.
So what is the difference between the two?
The emotional, I would have never let it go, because then I would have felt like, no, this is mine. And I think you've seen today in businesses, most founders, entrepreneurs, industrialists, when they've not allowed themselves to let them go, actually the companies have gone down the drain.
And then you formed this another company. And
so I think that was a great crossroad for me. I'm somebody who feels going into a second innings is quite different from going to a second act. And I think both of us come from theater and from films to understand what that means. But a second act means you do what you did, and then you now do it all over again. But a second innings is when you let that go, and then you start all over again, mm-hmm. all over again. So I think it was an excellent crossroad. A lot of people told me I can do this again. A lot of people, when I started doing other things, they said, "Are, but you're not calling me yet. We had such a great experience here working together. How come you're not calling me to come and join you?" And I'm saying, we had a great experience. Mm-hmm. Now I want to learn something completely new, and I want to do something new. If we sit together, I won't grow, you won't grow. We'll complete out each other's sentences like we used to do before.
Right.
And I think that's where today, when people in the work environment always feel, I've had great experience, let's work with these same people again, I would only say, challenge yourself a little bit more, otherwise nobody's going to challenge you.
What happens to this phrase people keep saying that you were at the right place at the right time?
I think you are a product of the choices that you make. And I think for all of us, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Timing actually is not a God gives man or a stroke of luck. Actually, mm-hmm. timing is improving your gut feeling every day. Mm. And I think that's what it would be. Because actually, at the time you're making decisions, mm. most people are booing you with that. I remember when I was exiting this, I went and met everyone, and they said, you're letting yourself down, you're letting the company down, you're letting the media industry down. Why are you doing this kind of situation? 5 years later, when other larger companies like Flipkart and all, you could see exits, then exit today has become a big word. At that time, in 2012, it was a bad word. Mm. Like in 1980s, entrepreneurship was a bad word.
Correct.
So I think I've been through those cycles enough to know that you need to be quite resilient.
What is important when you did this deal with UTV? Did you look at the passion side of it, or did you look at the money side of it? What was in your mind when you decided that?
I started my career with 37,500 rupees, which is the maximum that my parents could afford to give me at that stage. So to me, it was always, what have I got to lose? Now, it is true that as you evolve, you have more to lose. Mm. So I don't think today I can say and lean back on the 37,500 and say, whatever I've got to lose, because there's a lot more responsibility. We've created a not-for-profit. I have a lot more accountability in different senses. But at that stage, I think money is not the driving force. That doesn't mean it can be only passion, because if it's only passion, you'll make pet projects. And pet projects don't equal to commerce. So I would say the commerce of it, the commercial part of it, is something that I was ingrained from day one. And because I knew that I could not have a recourse to anyone bailing me out, because I knew I couldn't raise any money. I think today our sense of, when we start something, the sense of entitlement is very high. If you start with low entitlement, actually things work out much better in the long run. It takes a little longer, but it's rock solid. The foundation is solid. It's like saying I'm building something and I'm going to sell it in 4 years. It can never work. Mm. It's a little bit like I'll try it for 2 years. Let's see. Mm. If there's a let's see approach, it's not going to work. If you think you have a planned approach, that you have a goal post that I will sip a margarita on the beach by this age, it's not going to work, because you can't time any part of success or failure.
India is at a stage where it's great for entrepreneurs or individuals. PM Modi's and this government's Make in India, is it successful in films and things like that? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm very excited about everything to do with India today. I think my motto is, we're one of the very few countries today where if you ask 9 out of 10 people, will your tomorrow be better than your yesterday? Mm. Their answer will be a yes. Mm. And to me, that defines everything that we stand for. So it's the right time for anything you necessarily want to do. Mm. But it needs to be channelized. Euphoria with the right time can actually become the wrong time. Because yes, in the 90s, we were the tiger, we were the lion, we were all kinds of things, but it didn't get channelized. Mm. So bright ideas and bright vision is important, but execution is 10 times more important. But I'm also excited about that. Mm. Because I think there is implementation, there is accountability. The rhetoric, even today with the government, mm. is one of execution mm. and accountability. Mm. So if you build that into your DNA, that goes into the entire, because whether we like it or not, government is 25% of everything that everyone does in the ecosystem, the jobs that they create and everything else. So really exciting times. And I'm excited that all of us know that tomorrow is going to be better than yesterday.
I always say that I'm 8 years younger than my country. 47, India was born, and I was born in 1955. So we've grown up together. Now, when you see India and we are saying that we are the fifth largest economy, what has changed earlier and now? Why are we considered to be a very reckoning force?
I think there was always that raw energy. Mm. I think the channelization of it has been really acute. The accountability of it has been acute. Mm. I think our positioning in a global platform is equally important, right? Because positioning, perception, like anything else, and we are both from the media industry where we know positioning and perception is half the approach to whatever else. So I think the perception management of where India stands has been a very strong. It actually is internal because it makes you gain confidence in yourself because now you're saying it. And it's very strong because you get the endorsement from the outside. Plus the fact that that dichotomy of the rural India, even there, you aspiration levels in rural India have changed. And if you ask, and I work there with our foundation, because if 800 million people don't have aspirations, it doesn't make a difference how big the other 400, because the divide will be stronger. I think that divide is narrowing to quite an extent. Anyone feels I can make a difference. In a country, if anyone and everyone feels I can make a difference, we're in the right place.
Your organization works a lot in the rural areas. In fact, you have made up that every year you will educate a certain amount of people.
Yeah, it was one of my more expensive retention Swadesh. Statements. Yeah, so Swadesh came after the movie Swadesh we made, where Shah Rukh comes in and lights his bulb, so to speak, in India.
Yes.
So we had a foundation. I know a lot of people say philanthropy, you need to start when you've got gray hair and you got a bank balance. And I think one started the foundation when I was in my 20s.
Yes.
And I think I would urge everyone today that giving back in a country like India is equally important. But when we divested UTV to Disney, Zarina and I sat on the balcony and my wife, she said, I'm going to do a 10-day course for Teach for India. And I said, that's great. She came back and said, I'm joining Teach for India. I said, no, but wait a minute, we have this little foundation of ours. And she's, yeah, but this just sounds like a bigger thing. So between the two of us, I said, well, why don't we lift 1 million people out of poverty every 6 to 7 years? She said, are you serious? I said, yeah, I'm serious. Today, I think that's one of my most expensive retention statements I made for retaining somebody to be part of it. So the model that we created with Swadesh, which is what we called it at that particular stage, because there were 6 students that came from Columbia University and were going to our villages. And the conversation was on our veranda, and both Zaina and I looked at each other and said, this is exactly like the movie. And I think that's the powerful medium. I mean, movies is a powerful medium. I think Rang De Basanti, when one did that, that transformed, you know, opened up a case and had a very inspiration. I think Swadesh, today, till today, people come back and tell me, I came back because I saw the movie Swadesh. And I think a lot of people joined the army and the, you know, because we made Lakshya or we made Uri. That. So for us, Swadesh Foundation is part of bringing that rural-urban divide. We just felt that actually what I saw there was if we can change aspiration levels in rural India, it'll make an incredible difference. And I think we want to play our part in that.
Your daughter, Trisha, also has her own foundation. How did her idea about having a separate foundation, she could have worked with Swadesh, but she chose something different.
And I think she's good that she chose it on her own. So the Lighthouse Project for her is a very standalone. I think she did a film school and a master's from USC, University of Southern California. Came back and did one 100 Years of Indian Cinema documentary with Rakesh Om Prakash Mehra and Shekhar Kapoor. And then she came to me and said, I'm done with films. I think I want to be in the not-for-profit space. Like Big Brother, Big Sister in the US, it's a big movement. So in that same year, the mentor-mentee program. So her core was, how do I get privileged with the underprivileged? And that's been her core of how she's designed what she's doing.
And this government recognition of startup culture initiative and policy for startup, is it enough? Do you think it's enough?
It has to evolve. There can be, you can't write all the entire book on one single day. Every book has to be read chapter by chapter. If you read a whole book on one thing, I challenge anyone to remember what 3 things that came out, unless it's a fictional movie. So I think it's an evolved process. You know, there's ease of doing business, there's aspiration, there's ability to be able to call. So I think there's a fair amount of progress that's made there. Is it still challenging to do business in India? Of course it is. But in a pragmatic manner, it can't change overnight because the ecosystem won't allow you to be without any rules and regulations. There'll be complete chaos. So a lot of people tell me, you know, here it's tough to do business. And I'm saying, sure, go to the United States and try and do business there. It might be 10 times more difficult.
Exactly.
Because it's such a competitive environment. Are you ready for that level of competition? For that level of complete free market? So sometimes your moat is a level of complication.
So which is your most inspiring startup?
I guess the one that I'm going to maybe start later on. I think it's like, which has been my biggest failure. I think it's yet to come.
So how do you judge the success of any business?
Well, firstly, I would judge it for my own happiness. my own sense of pride, my own sense of tanking up my conviction
and
what I felt I did. Because finally, at the end of the day, you need to be your own judge. Sure, wealth creation is an important part. So your stakeholders are the team and the people. So to me, when I meet people today and said, who come and say, hey, when we worked with you, you gave us the toughest years, but actually those are the best years of my life. I think that's successful, that you ran an organization where people felt the hell level of ownership. Two, that you made an impact because you were communicating in various forms, whether it was television or movies or animation. And then the third one is, if there was wealth creation that came along the way. And I think now in education and with UpGrad, that's the similar thought process.
So how much do you keep involved with your startup, which has become a success?
Well, at this moment, my focus is to disrupt the learning, skilling, and workforce development education space with UpGrad. The not-for-profit has been actually a lifelong commitment. And some people play golf. I make movies.
Today's generation is restless. That doesn't mean that your generation, and I'm maybe slightly older than you, we were not restless. But I've done 540 films, and out of which I think I must have got script for 40 films. The rest of them were narrated to us. You must be getting a lot of scripts. How do you choose that this is the film I'm going to make?
So today, I think with RSVP as compared to UTV, it's a passion and a hobby versus at that time, it was a business in some form because there were shareholders and money. So when you're doing something for a business, I think 60% of the things you do because you have to do them and 40% because you want to do them. And I think when it's a passion or a hobby, it should be 99% of the time something you want to do and maybe 1% what you have to do. So to me, I look at scripts in a way of what I really want to do. Is it a gem from my point of view? Is it a story I do want to tell? Is it something that I'm personally involved with? I'm not taking anybody else's money. It is that accountability. It is what I want to do in that particular context.
What are his thoughts on great Indian brain, how to reverse it?
In the past, the context was your tomorrow was better outside of India than inside of India. Today, everyone knows your tomorrow is better, but it's only better because it's inside of India. And I think, therefore, there's no brain drain. Now, let's not say that if somebody has an aspiration to go and work abroad for 3 years, that's bad. Actually, that's good. If you had an experience with two Indian movies and then with a Hollywood movie, you come back richer with your experience.
I totally agree with you.
That will actually benefit what you're doing here in television or in films. The same way, when people go abroad to study, they're learning a very different sense of competitiveness. I know we want to be the Vishwa Guru of the world, and we should be. But at the same time, it's nothing wrong. We're 1.4 billion. We're 1/7 of the world's population. We therefore definitely can't be insulated. So I would urge people that there's nothing wrong in being across the world. But the brain drain is where you're losing, and it's a leak. The faucet is leaking. The faucet is not leaking. The faucet is no longer leaking. People are coming back. They know that if they want that tomorrow to be better, it'll happen in India.
I totally agree with you when you say that people who go abroad and then when they come back, they've come as a richer person. I was in US doing some work. When I came back, I became a better actor because I saw competition. I saw other people doing that.
But you also saw discipline. You saw bigness
exactly.
of ideas.
Yes.
You saw,
yes.
you know, where
yes.
your thinking completely opened up.
I still wonder that there was a certain sense of innocence when we were rural-dominated country. Now the gap is becoming smaller. When I say innocence, I mean there's a sense of wonder. Now there's no sense of wonder. You have one Google thing and you press it and it gets you information. But information does not necessarily translate into knowledge.
No.
Knowledge comes with living.
Yes. And knowledge does not translate into smartness either.
Exactly. Exactly. So you do a lot of work in rural areas. What is it that you are actually empowering them for?
I'm raising aspirations in whatever I am.
Yes.
And I'm empowering them to be self-independent.
Mm-hmm.
I think the crux in rural India today, Anupam, is that they don't feel in control of their destiny. Because if you're used to grants and if you can't control the life, when I go to the schools there, we take it for granted that in our class 9, somebody always used to give us, what do you want to do when you grow up? That's not a question is being asked in rural India. One of our most successful programs in our schools, in our 1,200 schools, was opening a library. The attendance went up by almost 20% in schools because we opened that library. It was for the kids, by the kids, and they were managing it. Mm. Before that, the library was a cupboard with a lock and a key in the principal's office and a possible book rental that you could go sit in the corner and come back. Mm. And the second one was our career counseling program. Mm. The question that, what will you do when you grow up? What do you want to do when you grow up? So outside of the normal fireman, policeman, Indian government, suddenly you got from four choices to 40 choices. Mm. Their parents didn't have that luxury. So they're not going to ask them that question because they know that even if the person says, I want to do this, they may not be able to afford it. So to me, that transformation is what is needed. Of course, we need water and we need sanitation. Of course, we need schools. Of course, we need solar power. But the soft aspect is going to go 10 times harder, faster. And one of the things we do is we have a village development committee. So we go into a village and we start that. Mm. And that is something we learned the hard way. For the first 3 years, we made targets. Mm. They were our targets, but they were not their targets. Mm. And there was a complete gap. When we got them to, and we actually, they make a five-year plan. Mm. Where do they see their village over the next 5 years? Where do they see their lives? Where do they see their own livelihood? If I can raise their livelihood 4x from what they are today, they will feel I'm independent, I'm not dependent. And when the man or the woman of the house feels that, mm. I think it's a massive transformation.
How much have books made a difference to your life or your thinking?
My wife is a voracious reader, so we have two large libraries in the house. And everyone says, wow, and you know, in Zoom calls, everyone says, lovely library. And I keep saying, that's not my wealth of knowledge, that's mm. hers. But for me, books have been chapters. Mm. I'm a nuggets kind of person. Mm. If I'm having a conversation, the main point is when you have a 1 hour conversation, if you can take two things away from it, mm. that's huge. Most people think, oh, you know, I wasn't focused. But the fact of the matter is you need to take two things. So I've been more a chapters of books person mm. than a whole book person.
And yet you wrote a whole book, not only chapters.
Yeah.
What prompted you to write your book?
So the first one that I wrote, Dream With Your Eyes Open, and I think that was because I was at that crossroad where I was starting my second innings and I was meeting a lot of entrepreneurs. And I reflected back 20 years back on my own journey mm. where they were at the similar crossroads. Mm. And failure, more than failure, fear of failure mm. was coming up. And I said, some things have changed, but some things just haven't changed. Mm. So to me, the book was more about talking about failures mm. on an ongoing basis, because I think failures need to be evangelized. Mm. Media evangelizes success mm. or negative stories, whichever way you look at that. Here, you need to evangelize failures. People don't talk about it proudly. Mm. And I think, you know, what you said, where you went to the US and did that, their failure is evangelized, meaning people look up to that. Mm. If you've done three failures...
I do a play on my failures called Kuch Bhi Ho Sakta Hai, my autobiography.
Yeah, yeah. There, if you've got three failures, there's a better chance of you getting funded because people have known that you've actually...
tried.
Yeah, you've got it. Now, there's a lot more experience. It's an asset side of the balance sheet. For a lot of people, the thing is in the liability side of your balance sheet. Mm. And I think, to me, that book was about communicating that.
And your second book?
The second book was because I was inspired now that I was getting into skilling and upgrad. And there, I do webinars, talk to, you know, young learners, midterm learners. Almost everyone is at a crossroad most of their lives. Mm. So it was about the fact that everyone is so obsessed with the hard skills of life mm. that we forget the soft skills of life. Mm. I'm a product of soft skills. Mm. I did my Bachelor of Commerce and then I didn't do much. I didn't have the self-confidence, but I earned it. I did elocution and debates and drama in school serendipitously. That gave me the level of confidence to sit here and have this conversation with you mm. 30 years later. Mm. See, you can take away, you can have setbacks in life, you can have failures, you can have a zero bank balance, you can go bankrupt. But nobody can take away your level of confidence and your ability and your skills. You can't be bankrupt on what you've learned in mm. life through failures. So that book was about that.
So if you were to describe your life and you were to give it a title, what will be the title?
All Glory is Fleeting.
It's a great title.
Yeah. I get criticized a lot, says I don't celebrate enough, you know. Mm. And I'm saying, yeah, because actually life is a little bit about that. And if you treat it in that manner, mm. you'll always be curious. You'll always have your feet on the ground. You'll always dream with your eyes open, not closed. And you'll be practical.
Well, as long as people like you are there, there is a lot of inspiration around. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure talking to you.
This is fantastic. Really,
how wonderful, how wonderful. I learned so many things from you today. Thank you, Ronnie Scrola, and thank you for watching. Join me next week for another intimate yet engaging debate. And let's talk Bharat with Anupam Kher.